I have three introductory slides before my title, so it's a bit awkward, but I wanted people to have a definition of what is digital soil mapping. So in fact, it's the production of digital maps of soil types or of soil properties by using field and laboratory observation methods, so what we call the soil pit data that are represented at the bottom there, coupled with environmental data. And we do this through a quantitative relationship. So you can see on the little graph, we start with real soil data, soil pit data, that we combine with what we call covariates, and try to build some models to get some maps. Digital soil mapping is undergoing a fantastic time. So if we look at here what is reported from Scopus, if you look at digital soil mapping, the number of publications is growing exponentially, as well as the number of citations. So why is this so? I think there are three factors. For one thing, we have better availability of data, and we have better quality of data. We have GPS today. We know where our soil pits are much better than it was before. And there's a general better understanding of the benefits of making data available. So more and more data are becoming available. We also have a greater availability and accuracy of covariates, of maps of all sorts. We have DEM, but now we have LIDAR, we have different spectral imagery, so this is growing also at a very fast rate, and there are more and more available. Finally, and this is happening in all fields, we are entering the era of big data, so we have better storage capacity, better protocol, better tools. So why is this important for our community? We now have maps of soil properties, not just maps of soil types. Maps have a greater consistency, less judgment call. These maps often provide a measure of uncertainty, which is not possible with traditional soil maps. I think we can deliver better products for the users, and you may have heard the terms tailor-made maps, maps on demand. Soil maps are not static anymore. We can improve them. We can make them right for the users. They can be updated, improved. And finally, it facilitates the use of soil information to other disciplines. So for example, some papers on vegetation shift, paper on change in NPP with climate change, are using soil information because we make it available to them in the format that they like. When a modeler asks you for some soil information, we can deliver what he wants. If you deliver soil orders or soil series, it's a challenge often for them. So it's a fantastic way to communicate our science and to make it more useful for ourselves and for others. I will switch gear and start my talk. It's called Improving the Prediction of Soil Properties with Limited Data. So I was fortunate to work with three very bright young guys who are much better than me at programming and in statistics also. So Julien Béguin and Nicolas Mansuy are from the Canadian Forest Service, and Gernan Fulstad is from the Department of Mathematical Science at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. So the goal of digital soil mapping is to reduce the prediction errors that you see in the box on top. There are four different factors affecting the prediction errors. The first one is the data. More data of good quality is what you need. The covariates also, as I mentioned, are we are getting more and more covariates that can be relevant. Second, the complexity of the processes. If we think of something like carbon accumulation in soil, sometimes the processes can be quite complex. They can be different from an area to the other. So that's another factor. And finally, there's the point three and four, which are the object of my talk, the statistical models and statistical methods. So the models is how do you build your model? Do you use functional relationship? Do you use linear combination or not? Do you allow for interactions among covariates or not? Are the models spatially explicit? Do you enter the coordinate in your model or not? And statistical methods. There's a lot of statistical methods out there. Parametric. Here they are divided in three families: parametric models, machine learning techniques that are quite used in digital soil mapping, and Bayesian approaches. So usually, in most papers, people run with one statistical model and one statistical method. And can we do? Should we try different methods? Can it help to make better maps? So this was the purpose of this study. We used the National Forest Inventory database. We only had about 500 georeference ground plots. The good thing is that the methodology is standardized. It's by soil increment cores. And so the methodology is the same everywhere, but this is a very small number of samples for the land size that we have. The objective of this study was to test the extent to which the choice of statistical models and statistical method can impact on reducing the prediction errors. So we had dependent variables from NFI plots. We selected these properties. So the old layer is very important in most Canadian forests. So we looked at the thickness, the CN ratio, and we looked at the top mineral soil, so the bulk density of the 0 to 15 centimeter percent of sand, total carbon content. And we used the independent, the environmental variables that were available on rasters of 200 by 250 meters. So from a DEM, you can extract a lot of topography indicators. From climate models, you can also get a lot of information. Geological maps and vegetation obtained from satellite imagery. Statistical method. We had seven statistical methods. So the parametric method that we that we tried were just simple linear model, GLM, additive models, GAM, machine learning, we used a random forest, boosted regression trees, weighted KNN, the K nearest neighbor. This is often used. It's used by, for the forest inventory in Finland. We use QBIST also, that is an extension of regression trees where it allows you to have more than one factor at each step. And we use a Bayesian approach, which I will call INLA. It's an integrated nested Laplace approximation. So seven methods of three different families and three different formulations. So in the first one, we use only environmental covariate, what we call the SCORPAN variable, so the soil forming factors. Then the second type of model that we use is to use only coordinates, so spatial only, basically X and Y. And finally, models where we combine both. So all together, 3 times 7, we had 21 combinations that we use over the same data set. Model validation, that's another point in DSM papers that is not standardized. We still see often an evaluation being made, a validation being made with the same, or the model being made with the same data that it's evaluated on. And there's all kinds of problems. So if you compare a study, one study comes with an R square of 0.9, the other one of 0.2, and there might not be a big difference. So I think this needs to be taken seriously, how we validate. So here, our statistician helped us into using a tenfold cross validation repeated 20 times. So it's a bit technical, but it's just to say, if you look at the first line, that we build the model, we verify the model not on the same data that were used to build the model, and we repeat this process tenfold to get an observation of observed versus predicted. And from then, this provides a cross-validated relative mean square error terms and a cross-validated R-square. We repeat this process for each group. We get an empirical distribution of relative mean square error, extract some value, and we run and repeat this 20 times. Some results. So the percent sand content, if we look here at the different methods, how good they did with the cross-validated R-square, we can see a lot of variability among methods. And we go up to about 40% looking at only the covariates, so the soil forming factors. If we look at only the spatial value, so latitude and longitude, in most cases we are better than the covariate for this soil property. So that's quite interesting. So only X and Y are beating what we know about soil formation. That's a little bit strange, but that's what we obtain. And if we combine both, then oftentimes we get even a better approximation. So if we compare the methods, let's say the best model using spatial and covariate, the green one, if you use a different method, you could increase the prediction by 60%. And if you use a different model, so the way you assembled, if you use spatial or not, in your covariates, you, in this example, there was a great gain in R-square, in prediction. So here I'm showing the results for all five properties, and what we can see in general is that not one model is universally the best. It varies with soil properties. In general, though, the spatial and covariate models were the best, but there were some exceptions. We are fairly good with sand. I guess that's the best percent sand. That's the best we could do. We are about postpone. Oh. Yeah.
4 hours.
4 hours. Yeah. Okay. carbon. The carbon content of the mineral soil, a very important property. We're very poor, regardless of the methods. So, what we see, the general idea is that the models and method that you use matters. Oftentimes, using the spatial coordinate will improve the results. I wanted to show an observation that we made. So we look at R-square, but then it's also important to look at the product, to look at the map at the end of the process. And what we see for equivalent R-square, here on the left, it's a random forest. On the right, the Bayesian approach. Both have relatively similar R-square. But when you look at the map, in models where you use coordinates, you often have these discontinuities that make no sense. What you see on the left is not real. It's not correlated to any ecological variable. So that might be another thing to consider. Again, look at the product. So, in conclusion, both the choice of statistical method and statistical model influence synergistically mapping performance. There was no single combination that outperformed all other in all cases. All group models. Update later. So overall, it's better to test different methods, different models. In the future, there's a need to end simultaneously on two fronts. Data, we need more data available, and on methods. Methods may seem perhaps difficult for some people for this study, and I think in the community there's a willingness to make methods available. Here it was all programmed in R, and we wish to make them available as soon as the paper is produced. And so don't be afraid of these methods. There are nice packages that can help you. So it's possible to test different methods. Thank you for your attention.